This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Yeah, I think it is worth reflecting on again what I touched on briefly this morning, because it's a very important feature. It isn't a small thing in that we are entering our eighth year, starting off this month, and just the nature of the group I think is important to reflect upon. It isn't through lack of imagination that it is quite a simple, straightforward group. There's not a lot of bells and whistles. Nobody could accuse us of having lots of bells and whistles. What does that mean? That means lots of stuff other than direct sitting practice. We don't vary our meetings. We don't have themes. We don't have themes means to focus on various aspects of practice or history or bodhisattvas or personalities in Buddhism and various features of this immense thing called Buddhism, which has so many avenues and so many fascinating, fantastic stuff. It's not a criticism at all. But I think there's always a danger that you can get lost in the woods with it, that it becomes so much can become a diversion, a way of sort of taking your eye off the ball, as it were. And yet, that's not really what should happen. It should help you focus on yourself and on your practice and keep your eye on the ball. But the nature of our mind is that we're always looking for diversions. We don't like simplicity. We like profusion. We like lots and lots of things to think about and lose ourselves in lots of ideas and just drift off. And by doing that, it's very, very easy to actually forget why we're doing this in the first place. Or maybe you should ask yourself why you're doing this in the first place. Because if you want to accumulate lots of knowledge, lots of Buddhist knowledge, with the different traditions and the history and the personalities, the great sages and saints that populate them all, and the great stories and stuff, it's endless. It goes on forever, right back to the Buddha and even beyond, even before the Buddha was born, with the Jataka tales. That's in itself is a practice on its own, if you wish, or a study on its own, and then make it into a practice, see it as a part of the bodhisattva ideal. And on it goes. And, it's all there for you to... It's there for you to pursue. And lots of people do. And it's what they do. It seems to be a part of what's allowable within their particular tradition. And that's the way it is. But with us, we try to keep our eye on the ball. We try to keep focused. We don't allow ourselves lots of diversions, lots of temptations to go off and get lost in various aspects of the teachings and just the whole landscape that is a part of this great religion that we are. making use of. And the lineage, the fact that it's been passed down the centuries for over 2,000 years allows us to be sitting here today practicing the Dharma. So it has its purpose, its use. It helps to create, it helps to keep the thing moving along, a continuity that goes through the generations, through the centuries. So it's there to be accessed by those that have interest. So we must be careful about getting a bit smug about things, but rather say, well, that's the way some people pursue their practice, and that's fine if it's a choice. You're always free to come and go. In any Buddhist tradition, the door's always open. The door never gets locked in Buddhism. That's part of its nature. It doesn't matter who you are. You can be a monk of decades, but you can wake up one morning and say, right, that's it, I've had enough. Take your robes off and walk off, and nobody can stop you. So that's the great, I think, part of its, the spirit of what we do, is that you do it because you engage with it because you want to. And there's no compulsion. So there's lots of avenues, there's lots of beautiful flowers in the garden that you can focus on and give your attention to. But for us, the way we do it is that we don't have a lot of profusion, as I was saying. And today we're starting this is our eighth year of the official beginning of this group, although just to make it clear, it actually goes back beyond that, but that's when it sort of matured, as it were, and found its own identity and its own autonomy. A practice that is wholly traditional, practiced by Western people without anything of note being dumped and nothing added, because we're Westerners, we think very often that we need to add things and eject things from the traditional practices that have been on offer for centuries. We don't do that. This group is about sticking with the traditional practice. What we don't have is that we don't have the Eastern culture and the natural things that will grow around traditions that are hundreds of years old that will naturally take on and reflect the culture at the time. Things get added. This is where your bells and whistles come in. But for us, we respectfully put to one side things that reflect the cultures and the traditions of Far Eastern Buddhism. But what we do is that we embrace the essence of all of those that make all of those possible, and that's called the Dharma. And the Dharma, actually, when you look at the Dharma and you take away, you strip away the garments that get thrown over the Dharma as the years go by, as the centuries go by, when you take all of those extremities off, you'll find that the Dharma actually is not a very big thing. It's not a complicated, it certainly is not complicated. The Dharma actually is very simple and very straightforward. And if you want change, you come to this training, if you want change, then it's the Dharma is the most important feature. And like I say, it's so easy to get lost in the individuals, in the externals, in the stuff the clothing that's been thrown over the Dharma over the years. It's so easy to take that stuff as being the Dharma, whereas in fact it's not. And what it's there for, and if you understand it, it is actually helping you to understand the Dharma, put the Dharma into practice. But it's very easy to not see it in those terms and take the form that you see as being the Dharma, and convince yourself that if you are, for example, a good Buddhist, you are practicing the Dharma. And if you do all the right things in your tradition and you carry off the image and you create the image, and then you're practicing the Dharma. But you've got to be very careful with these things, because actually the Dharma doesn't have an image. It doesn't have it's not an identifiable object. You can't point to it and say, look, there's the Dharma. You can't pick it up and say, oh, look at it, there it is. It's this shape, it's that size, it's this colour, it does this and it does that. It's not that like that at all. And I think because of that sort of empty nature, we have to chuck clothes over it so that we can get some sense of it, that it helps us to orientate ourselves. Because without all of that stuff, we can so easily miss it, because the Dharma is very subtle. It's not a crude thing that's in your face, but something incredibly, incredibly subtle. And for us, for our particular way of training, this for us is what this is about. It's about keeping our eye. It's to look through the external forms, look through the external imagery. We've all got a personality which we've created, and we would describe ourselves as being this type of person. And when we come to the Dharma, we come to the training, this isn't about, you may well not like yourself, your personality. There's a very good chance that you don't, because most of us Westerners don't like ourselves. And we would love to be a different type of person. We'd like to be a different personality with all the qualities that we would that we so admire and see as an expression of the true human condition, the true human heart. And we would therefore like to be that type of person, that type of personality. But you've got to be very careful there, because I don't believe that practicing the Dharma is about creating a personality. A new image for yourself. So easy to fall into, because we do need these things to hold on to, because we do need self-identity. So we then eject the identity that we have when we start, and we cultivate a new identity very easily that we consider to be something wholesome and desirable, that would also be respected and admired by others. So we then end up creating another personality. We call it a Buddhist one, if you like, and you can see it. But you've got to be very careful about that, because that's not the Dharma. That's a creation. That's what you create for yourself. It's another self view. I'm not that sort of person anymore. I've now turned myself into this sort of, which actually I'm sure is, you know, no doubt a more desirable person than you used to be, of course. But is it the Dharma, or is it just another self-view, another image that you create for yourself that you hold on to? And now, I am now this person. I'm not that person anymore. And it happens all the time. You can see it around. But you've got to be very careful that you're just not playing games with yourself, changing yourself from A to B. Actually, the Dharma is about is not becoming anything. It's dumping everything, as it were. It's to dump all the clothing and have no desires to be any type of person, as it were. in the sense of that you are, that you create something, but rather allow what is your own innate nature to shine through, to come through. When you drop away the stuff that's preventing it from shining through, and by all means, that you will be an identified person with a personality, but it won't be one that you create. It won't be manufactured. It's something that you hide behind and something that you identify yourself with. It will be the natural expression of your own inner nature that's no longer restricted by the self-view. And that's what we aspire to, but it's not something that you're going to create. You have to get out the way, as it were, and allow it to have trust that it will come through and shine through and have its own expression. And so we have to, again, it's just more pitfalls that we can create for ourselves. And to get away from the self-view that we've got is very, very difficult. To change the self-view is very easy, and that's what we would like to do. But Dharma isn't about creating something. And so I think the least you have around you that's tempting you to become this type of person, the more you can become an authentic Dharma practitioner and stop trying to become a particular type of person, which is the temptation is always there. I always remember it's one of the first things that I heard my Zen teacher say, and it came to me very early on, and it struck me so deeply, and it was so useful, because we are stuck with this dilemma that we don't like ourselves, or there's certain aspects of ourselves that we don't like, we want to eject, but we have the dilemma that, well, okay, of course I don't want to be like this and this, but then I've got to be something. So the temptation is to create another persona, because that's, otherwise we get lost. We become disorientated, we become fearful, we've got no protective mechanism, we've got nothing to hold on to and stuff. I think it's probably one of my dilemmas when I came. Because I had a whole list of things that I didn't like about myself, that I didn't want. And I also had another list of what I wanted to become. Which is, I think it's something that's quite normal. But you have to grow out of that and see that that's not the way that it works. And for me, my refuge has always been, rather than try to be somebody, try to create something, another image, it was quoting a Zen master, no airs and graces, just be your everyday normal self, just be who you are. And I found that so liberating, because it gave me a focus, as it were, that I didn't have to become something. I didn't have to create another persona, which is very burdensome and also incredibly difficult to do. And you can bet your life you're going to mess it up. It'll only be an ego thing anyway, because it's only ego. Did you want to become a better person? And that I always found that just be yourself. Don't try to be somebody who you're not. And there's your starting point. You see, no airs and graces, no clothing, no trying to be something, to be somebody, and this becoming, this creating all the time is what we do. And following this training, it should encourage us and make us become aware that it isn't about creating, but about uncreating. But I think the more that you take on, and the more that you're prepared to chop and change and follow the temptations of always presenting new things and doing new things, there's this becoming mentality, which is very worldly. That if you do that, you can very, very easily lose the essence and get caught up in the imagery and miss the essence. And the essence is the Dharma. And if you focus on the Dharma and just concern yourselves with the Dharma, this is not complicated. You don't have to keep creating more and doing new things and adding things to your practice and your training and create this image and make this thing around yourself which you call practice. But actually just contend to be with yourself, to focus on yourself, to know yourself, to look into yourself and be aware of yourself. And cultivate the basic principles that we talk about over and over, of awareness, or the simplicity of awareness, and of stillness, and of silence. In silence, there isn't anything. Silence doesn't belong to Buddhism. There isn't anything there. But in that place of silence, that it's not a dead void, a nothingness at all, but within that silence that we are encouraged to cultivate, within that you will find your true self, who you really are. That the man of no rank, as one of the masters termed it, to be a person that is not a person, but is something, an expression of the great mystery of life. That actually that, you don't actually belong to anybody, you're not anybody, and yet you're everything, and you're everyone. It's the paradox, it's the journey of the spiritual journey, that of one of letting go, of not wanting to become, but trusting and opening up to a part of you that has been always liberated, and allow it to shine through. And in order for that to happen, we have to be very, very careful. We have to protect that possibility and not get seduced into following, into becoming, this proliferating, papancha. It's a very important word in Buddhism, papancha, Pali word, or maybe it's Sanskrit also, a becoming, always proliferating, always wanting to add things. This isn't about adding at all, this is about letting go of what we've already got and not putting anything in its place. And if you pursue that, I think you become very wary about making this very complicated, because it gets in the way, complications get in the way, and the temptation to follow these things, so that you do create something for yourself, another personality, that you're replacing something with something else, which is what we do all our life. We spend our whole life chasing things, and when we get it, we dump something, we pick up something new, and then when that doesn't give us the contentment that we're looking for, then we'll dump that and then we'll go for something else and something else, and we're always chasing and grabbing and holding on to and stuff. That's the nature of the mind. That's the human condition, that's always wanted to become, to get a self-identity. But the Dharma is about letting go of all of that. It's turning the whole ship round. And learning not to do that any longer, learning not to be tempted into creating something for yourself that you think is going to give you liberation, that's going to make you something special or whatever. And very often it is about creating an image for yourself that others will respect and admire. that's the desire that's there. And that runs with us all the time. But when you come to this group, and this, the nature of this training, because this is not unique, this is just picking the baton up that's been passed on for generations, for many hundreds of years. So there's nothing new here. But being in this group and the way we train, we have to be alive to the dangers of becoming something, trying to turn ourselves into something else. We don't like A, so we're going to turn ourselves into B. And Buddhism is there to help us let go of everything, but it is so profuse, it is so big, it's so enormous that we can misunderstand it and take it for being the thing itself, and we go grabbing at it and we want to become this and become that. That's the great danger. But the Dharma isn't about grabbing at about anything. The Dharma is about letting go of what we already hold on to. And when you look at, if you can look at the Dharma, at least look at the essence, its nature, you won't see anything there. You won't see anything to become. You can't look at it as an object and say, oh look, that, oh there it is there, I want to become like that. You won't find anything there. And yet we still want to become something. Because we can't help it. Always becoming. And when we become whatever it is, if we become what we set out to become, that will last so long, and then you want to become something else because it's not real. And it won't do it for you. It won't give you that ultimate contentment, satisfaction that we all, happiness, true happiness, that we are always striving for, because it's just another thing. It's a thing, and it may be a lovely thing, but it's subject to all the laws of what all things are subject to, i.e. impermanence, and they're unsatisfactory, and they will always in the end let you down, because they're always changing. They're not fixed, they're not permanent. And we have to be alive to this, because there is actually something, or not something, but there is a possibility of permanence, something that is actually there, permanent, that won't let you down. But it's not an object. So if you're reaching out and trying to grab it, You'll never pull it off, because there isn't a thing there to grab, there isn't a thing to hold and to possess and to become. Dharma is so subtle. We can lose it in an instant. We have to keep reminding ourselves and keep coming back to that essence and just come into the heart and to the centre of it and just refresh and remind ourselves. Be careful, be careful. Mara is there all the time tempting us to just add a little bit more here and add a little bit more there, a little bit more interesting. It's getting boring, let's add a bit, let's do this and let's do that. But actually, with this group, you have everything that you need for your liberation, actually, I believe, and I'm quite prepared to be challenged by that. I don't think it's ego, but it might be. If anybody wants to challenge it, they can. Because I think it gives what you need to bring in order to be able to discover the truth of the Dharma, discover what it is, what it truly is, is that you need to take refuge. You need to create a form around you to protect you from the temptations of becoming something. of changing from A to B, and missing and missing and missing, missing the point, missing it, because it's so easy to miss. Because you decide that you're going to become I'm going to become this sort of a person. That's where the Dharma is. But actually, as I say, the Dharma isn't a thing. The Dharma certainly isn't a person. And it isn't something identifiable, and it's something that you will ever be able to grab hold of and make a possession. So how do you fulfill something that is not obtainable? It can often become, and I've discovered it can become what I would call a spiritual crisis. You can be very committed to this training and go through so much, and so much can fall off, and yet there is still something there that wants to become, and you feel that however subtle it is, that you feel that you want to become something, and you want to sort of help it along, as it were, and then realize actually there isn't anything you could do about it. I think, how can you do this? It's supposed to be a training and a commitment, and yet when you actually really see the heart of it, you're not actually doing anything. For me, there've been times when it's been, you know, it's been a real crisis. I would call it a crisis. It's like you come to crossroads all the time, where the attachment becomes more subtle, and the desire to become becomes more subtle, and yet it's still there. And somehow you've got to let it go, and still be committed. Such a paradox, such a seeming, an insolvable issue, it would seem. But if you have Buddha, Dharma, Sangha in your life, and you take refuge in those three characteristics, then these things do become solvable. It does become possible to actually move on, so to speak, not get stuck, not lose it and go off and become something and convince yourself that actually you are becoming enlightened or whatever your aspiration may be. And to have a Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha in your life, which is at the heart of all traditions, all practices. Buddhists has learned to fall out with itself down the centuries, the different schools and the different philosophies and approaches and the bickering that's gone on almost from the beginning that's gone on. But there are a few things that there is no bickering about, that they all agree. And taking refuge is one of them. Nobody disputes that. So it's very important, obviously, isn't it? It's vital, and so you have to be in a position where you can access those three refuges, so that they can help you on this journey, this incredibly subtle and very difficult journey. It's difficult because it's so difficult to pick it to get it right. Because it doesn't relate to anything in your life. And you have to learn to pick it with all the forces and all your habits that are continually pulling on you, to pull you away and to keep you locked into your becoming something, creating for yourself. So you need the refuges. And to be able to access those refuges as and when they need to be accessed, And I believe that you have that in this setup that we have here. I believe that it's all there, and it's there to be used as and when you need to use, and to acknowledge and to be grateful and to embrace and to recognize the importance and the non-negotiating reality of it, because Buddhists love to negotiate Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So many do. They decide that they don't need a teacher because they've read a bit and they've listened to this and that. They don't need a teacher, and they understand the Dhamma. They've got it all sussed, basically, and they don't really need to refine it, to open, to see the subtlety of what is, can be very crude in the beginning, but becomes ever more subtle. Not bigger, not taking on more and more knowledge, not reading more books, so that you have so many different perspectives, that if you read the traditions and you read the books, you'll end up with this monstrous great thing. You'll be so full of ideas, so full of concepts, that you consider to be, well, I know the Dharma. Well, if you know the Dharma, well, you'd actually realize that you don't need to know very much. You don't need to keep accumulating. Actually, what you need to do is to refine, assuming what you've got is Dharma in the first place, is to refine, to look into that, because it's bottomless. It's not an object. You can't go so far and then hit the wall and say, there you are, I've done it. You can't do that with the Dharma because it's not an object, so you will never completely know it. You can't say, I know the Dharma. You know what you know, but that's not the end of the road. And you can convince yourself, especially if you get some sort of a breakthrough, I know, I've seen, I'm enlightened. I know the Dharma, I know it. I've done it. And then whatever that turns into from there. Actually, if you truly know what you've seen, you know you're just getting reflections. You're just getting little inklings, even though it can be very profound and life-changing. There is no end to it. You never reach the end, ever. So if you know the Dharma, if you truly know the Dharma, you will never say that you know the Dharma, actually. You never get up and say, oh, I know the Dharma, I've got enough, I've got it, I can suss it all out myself now. And you get plenty of people that do that. And the third one that you get, which is very common, oh, I don't need Sangha, I understand this. I don't need all these stupid people around me. Most of them don't know what they're talking about anyway. And I can do it on my own and just go off and have a practice that you consider, well, I know what I'm doing. I don't need people. I don't need whatever it is that is this community business and all this group meditation, these retreats and all that stuff. I do my own retreats. I go and do my own practice, and that's good enough. And people around Buddhism are always compromising the refuges, a lot of people. Whereas the wise ones will know that actually you can't compromise the refuges. They're not there for you to fiddle with and pick and choose and decide what you want and what you don't want, what's convenient for you and what's challenging for you is more to the point. So you turn your back on it and say you don't need it. But actually you do need that, and you have to have the humility so that you never go beyond the refuges, actually. and they're there to be used. And if it's in place and it's the right thing, it's the raft. It's what will ferry you, and you use it skillfully. And those refuges, I don't think they are complicated. They don't need to be complicated, but they should be in your life. And I think they are in the life of this group. And if you've got refuges, what more do you want? Why do you want to make it complicated? Why? Where's this desire to just give me more? I'm bored with that. Give me a theme. Give me something to study, to inspire me. And so you want more. It's this papancha, this heaping more on what you've got. Whereas in fact, if you truly want to see the Dharma, to know the Dharma, it isn't about more, it's about less. It's less, it's always less. You've got more than enough stuff that you're already carrying around. You don't need to heap more on. You need to dump what you've got. It has to be dumped in the correct way. Letting go. So it's an unbecoming, not a becoming. And that flies in the face of everything that we're familiar with, that we see life as about. But that's the way the Dharma works. That's how you awaken to the truth of reality, to nature, which doesn't belong to anybody and is not an object. It's not a thing. It doesn't abide in space and time. It doesn't go near any of this nonsense of birth and death that we're all familiar with. It's there, and yet it's with us all the time. We actually live out of it all the time. In fact, the truth is that we are the Dharma. And it's there, and we've just turned away from it. We're looking out there, looking for this, and how do I find it? What do I do? What is it? Where is it? What have I got? And on and on and on and on. Whereas, in fact, ultimately, it's the Dharma that's looking for itself. But it's got so bamboozled that it's looking in the wrong direction. It has to learn to turn around and look within. And you learn the training is about turning and looking within. It's about becoming aware of yourself. So when you walk, know you're walking. When you stand, know you're standing. When you sit, know you're sitting. When you're lying down, know you're lying down. That's all. There's nothing else on top of that. You don't have to start heaping loads and loads of stuff on top of that reality. Just know it. When you're sitting here, know you're sitting here. There isn't anything then for you to do to heap on top of that and become something. Just be alive that you're here, sitting here, with an empty, open mind, with no opinions. Not sticking what you hear in boxes and having dialogue with yourself. I like that bit, I don't like that bit. And all this, just be like an open vessel and be fully alive to just being here. And when you touch that, there you are. That's where you'll find the truth, there, in that there. It's called silence. It's called awareness, stillness. There's nothing in there. But the truth is there, your liberation is there. Your freedom from the dukkha that brings you here in the first place. There, why do you want to make it complicated? The fact that you want to heap stuff on of it, there's the reason why you're suffering. Because you want to do something about it. That when you get that impulse, when you want to possess what you're hearing and manipulate and play with it and stick it in boxes and analyze it and all this. There, that's why you suffer. That's why you come here. There, look at it. Let it go. Don't go there. Just open and listen, like an empty vessel. No opinions. Don't stick it in a box. It's not like and dislike, not good and bad, right and wrong. Just be open and listen. There. You are touching who you really are, and who you really are is the Dharma. I mean, how simple is that? And that's what you'll get with this group. It's just that reminder all the time that actually, if you want to be free, if you want to be liberated, don't make this complicated. Because the more you heap on, the more you wander away from the center, the more you wander away from the truth, the more you heap on. You can get everything you need from this group. You don't actually need to go reading books in order to cultivate your understanding. You may do it out of interest, but know it. Know why you're reading and why you're studying this and studying that. It's fantastic stuff. But don't delude yourself that you're doing it because it's going to free you. It's very unlikely that it's going to help you at all, and you don't need it. What you need is patience and perseverance and sticking with it and not try to cut corners and take shortcuts, but to just stay with it, bear with it, and let the stuff that you carry, that you hold on to, let it fall away. And when it falls away, there you'll find the truth and discover that it's always been there. You don't make any of this. You don't manufacture any of the truth, the insight, the wisdom, and all the stuff. You don't make a single dot of that. Not if it's real and genuine. What you do is you get out the way, and it will rise up and show itself because it's already there, whole and complete. That's what silence does. Simplicity. This is what simplicity does when you bring it to your life and you bring silence and spaciousness to yourself. Who you really are will begin to shine through this person that you've created, this desperately running around trying to become something all the time. It will begin to shine through. And you see that. I mean, how simple is that? You're not doing anything. And yet, that will grate against everything in you because you spent your whole life doing things, becoming. And so you fall into the habit. And you suffer. That's why you suffer. If you want the answer, if you haven't found the answer yet, if you've not discovered that for yourself, there it is. See, I was becoming. I was chasing, holding on to. I wanted to become something. Something new, something else. And I like to think that that what you get here is giving you the environment, not a partial environment. I believe it's giving you the whole environment that you need, and you need the environment that will just help you let go and find the simplicity and discover the Dharma. And when you discover the Dharma, that then you'll be liberated. Then you'll be free of suffering, of becoming. Maybe even be free of rebirth eventually. But in the meantime, you can certainly lighten the load, lighten the burden more and more. Because I think you get Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha here. And like I say, we're entering our eighth year. And as I said this morning, if you come here last year, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, nothing has changed. We've refined a few things. We got ourselves a wooden fish now. We didn't have that 8 years ago. So things do change, I suppose. But these are just small things that... we've got a few gongs in our time as well. We've got a Chinese one now. And we've got a bell for walking. We didn't have things like that. That's true. Didn't have those things 8 years ago. but the essence and the form and the form that we follow. It's been in place since the very beginning. That's what you need. You need consistency. You need something that you can trust, that you know is there. That every time you come here, and most of you travel a long way, when you come here, you're not going to say, "Oh my, what's going to happen today? What surprises are there in store for us today?" Well, I'm sure you've let that one go. If you had that one, you let that one go a long time ago. These are the same, each one. And that's why, because we're not going anywhere. We're not trying to become something. We're not trying to just heap on, build this great thing that needs lots of add-ons all the time. We've got all that we need, and I believe you have all you need for your liberation, and I really mean that. And if people, you know, I just believe I have utter conviction of that. And you know, if anybody wants to challenge it, that's fine. I'm not looking for a fight, but I'm quite happy to have my say on it. I don't believe that you need anything added to this. It may not suit you. You may feel that you need a slightly different flavour and go somewhere else. You know, I'm not saying it's the be-all and the end-all. But the nature of this group is that it's got this stability and this something that you can rely on. Something you can trust. Trust is so important. You need trust. When you lose everything around you, and you've got nothing to hold on to, the only thing that you've got is you just got to trust that it works and trust that it will support you whilst you see something through that will show its impermanence if you stick with it. And trust it, because I know that, I say that, and I've mentioned it before from time to time, especially in my first few years, where I went through so difficult times. My first 4 years, actually, I can remember, was so difficult, and just dragging myself to the meetings, and dragging myself to the cushion, and just going through all sorts of darkness, that it's all I had. I used to look around that room sometimes when, because you're not supposed to look around, actually, but in little moments when nobody was looking, look around with utter gratitude that I felt I was being held. There's no way, if these people weren't there, there's no way could I have gone and sat with my stuff, sat with my darkness and my depression. There's no way I would have done it. It's impossible. It would have been literally impossible for me to do it on my own. But I trusted that when I went to the meetings, that it was going to be the same as the last meeting. There weren't going to be any surprises. It wasn't going to suddenly turn into something, "Oh, what's going on here?" I knew that it would be exactly the same. And I learned to trust that. And I took refuge in that. And I knew that that's there to support me. And I took my darkness to those places. And all I had, it was nothing, it was just sitting with it. There was nothing, no bells and whistles going off. Just sitting with it. But being able to sit with it so that it saw itself through, so it burnt itself out and things fell away, that was only possible because of those people. Those people that I knew were there regularly. Half of them I didn't know personally anyway. I probably knew most of the names, first names. Well, I didn't know them personally. We didn't hang out, we didn't go to the pub together. One or two I saw, but mostly I didn't. You only see them when I went to the meetings every week, but I could trust them. I knew they were going to be there every week. I knew that they were going through exactly the same as me, because sometimes I felt okay and I could see that they were going difficult. We're all in the same boat. We all knew where we were coming from. that is just priceless. And without that, never mind the teacher who was, for me at that time, was fantastic, and I got to appreciate that you can't do this without, there's no way I could have done it without a teacher to get that support, that emotional support. I had to do it myself, but just to get that, again, it's the support. But to see the Sangha, is not, so not just the teacher, to see the Sangha as well, that I could trust them. I could trust them when everything else was falling around me and everything was caving in on me. I could trust that they would get, they were like a life jacket. They would support me as I was sinking. Just to bear with them, just to stay with. Nobody was handing out any great pearls of wisdom, but they were there, week after week, just like this, sitting there, so that I could sit through my stuff and bear with all my stuff, so that until it all went into change, which it did. A lot of very heavy stuff went into change. It had never come back. And that's 40 years ago, nearly. But without that support, the Sangha, I wouldn't have done it. Never mind the teacher. Without the support, I wouldn't have done it. That's how big Sangha is. That's how big the refuges are. Because you're going to need them. One or the other, or all three, you're going to need those supports at some point in your training. And to have them there, and to trust and to know and to rely on them and to know they're there is what they're about. So I like to think, you know, after these years you have that and you can trust it, and if we're still here in the future and you come back when we're celebrating our 25th anniversary. With, I hope somebody would make a cake on that day. and we come here, it will be exactly like this. You might be a little bit greyer and not quite so agile as we are now. but it will be there. And, you know, I think it's worth not taking it for granted, but to acknowledge that and realize that in terms of Sangha, that means that you are a part of creating that form. Nobody else does it. Everyone has their part to play. Everyone. You take, talk of the times when I had to take, but there are times when you give, and you give for other people. So you give and you take, and that's the perfect way, the perfect scenario. You give and you take. And, you know, I think that is worth reflecting on at this time. This time of the, you know, as I say, we're going off into a new year. Don't take it for granted. That's something that we are so prone to do in life. Never mind this. It's always be taking things. We take things for granted. We take people for granted. We do it all the time. We must be so careful. And we don't take this for granted, because we come and we contribute to it. We keep it going and we acknowledge it. That this is here because I'm helping to contribute. I'm playing my part in this. I'm not just a taker. You've got to give as well. Because if you're just a taker, that's not the Dharma. That's just greed and self-interest. That's not Dharma. You're not going to find the Dharma if you're just taking all the time. It's just nonsense. You've got to give. Take when you need to, and give at the times when you're capable of giving. And don't take it for granted. Then you have something special. And I believe, you know, we've got these three things in place. I think it's worth reflecting on, and it's worth seeing that, you know, we're not a group of bells and whistles. We don't have a lot of paraphernalia that goes on. But what we've got is very precious. And it's the most important features. We're not in the entertainment business. We're not changing all the time just to keep you here, stop you getting bored and going off and joining somebody else. So I'm going to entertain you and come out with a new thing here and there. No, here's what's here, and it's for you to discover the preciousness of that and to appreciate it and to come and participate and to come and help keep the whole thing going, to be present, to come and be present, so that we forever cement this group of ours. Without people, it won't work. This is very dynamic. This is very alive. There's nothing dead with this group. We sit. We're very committed. We're very serious. We sit continually. Whenever we meet, we sit in silence. And that commitment there. And we keep that going. And then I think it's a benefit to everybody. So, here's to the next 8 years.